Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to Bad Storytellers, a podcast about a small group of writers in Titusville, Florida. I am your host, Josh LaForge, and with me today is Liam Malone.
Don't need no credit card.
Max Wessel.
I'm sorry, I'm not Mick Foley.
Doug Banks.
Hello.
And today we have a special guest joining us to have his work critiqued live on the air, Malachi Cull.
Oh, no.
Congratulations on winning that contest.
Yes.
That none of you knew about.
Yeah, the contest just, we didn't advertise. Or
that all you, of you are entered in, too, if you live in the area and you submit stuff. It's not impossible.
Yeah, it's not impossible. You could do it.
As the winner, you get criticized.
Ooh.
Yeah. Looking you forward. Fucking suck at winning.
Dad, is that you?
All right. So I don't have any retractions this week.
What?
There were some minor inconsistencies, but it wasn't anything that I could even quantify into a retraction like I normally do.
Good.
Let's shoot for the stars this time. Let's really rack them up.
All right. I'm just going to purposely say a bunch of incorrect shit then.
Just not on purpose. Just don't fact check yourself before you say it.
You guys are in luck.
I don't like the thing that it's like.
The Battle of Hastings was in 999.
No, it wasn't.
Okay. So the way this podcast works is we typically start.
It's October 1066.
We typically start by discussing the media we've consumed between now and our last podcast. And then we move on to our own writing samples that we've submitted to each other and then give each other criticism. So one of the things you can do is you can actually submit your own writing to badstorytellers@gmail.com and have us critique your stuff live on the air. It can't be longer than 10 pages, but we're happy to do that. I mean, that's really all this podcast is for, to be perfectly honest.
I would love to.
Yeah. And also, at the end of each episode, we roll the dice, find three genres from a list of genres, and then we try to figure out how those would be a film, and then we record the trailer for that film for your listening pleasure. So how you guys doing? How's everybody doing today?
Doing well.
Good.
Very good. Feeling fresh.
It's been 2 weeks since our last episode, so I assume there's a decent amount of media that everybody's consumed.
You'd be wrong.
You did? Okay. Well,
that's not a fair amount.
Why don't we start with Doug? What'd you do?
I haven't had a lot of time to watch movies or TV with my new full-time job.
Braggadocio.
But I have played some more games recently, and I started playing Alien Isolation, and that is like the best thing to happen to the Alien movies.
Is that the Donald Trump game?
Since Aliens.
Like, what's it for?
Say what now?
PS4?
Alien Isolation,
Xbox?
Is that the Donald Trump game?
Computer?
That was good, Max.
System is the game on?
It's the horror survival game that I have on Steam.
Oh, cool.
All right.
Yeah.
And I bought it like a year ago and just haven't had the chance to play it until now.
You know
now.
How many games I bought on Steam? I just don't play.
So many.
Yeah, like everybody.
I saw someone play that with the Oculus Rift. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I am dying to play it on the Oculus Rift because it's like, it is scary and stressful, even in, you know, first person on the computer, but...
Yeah.
The Oculus, like, it'll be a little bit more stressful because you feel like you're there, but it's good that you're going to feel like you're there because you so badly want to, like, turn your head to peek around walls and stuff, and you can't really do it in the game that well. So it's like, it'll give me that freedom to, like, look where I want.
I rode a roller coaster in Oculus Rift, and I felt like I was there. So I can't even imagine what the Alien game with the
newer
model
would be. Dude, it's so stressful and so authentic to the movies. You really feel like you're in it. And
the living nightmare.
I knew I was sitting in, like, a computer office chair, but my stomach was flipping like I'm flying down a roller coaster mountain.
I have legit had two nightmares since I started playing the game. They don't have the alien in them, but I wonder if it's just because I go to sleep and my anxiety levels are still through the roof.
It's there. You just don't see it.
No, it's there. It is there.
Like, I can only play and then get killed once, maybe twice, then I have to stop. Like, I can't, it's not one of those games you can marathon and power through. Like, oh no, I'm so close to beating this, I just gotta beat this thing. After you die twice, I'm just like, you know what, it's not happening. Like, I'm just gonna have to leave, walk away.
Just years of your life are wasting away.
Any shows you watched or movies you saw as well?
I'm struggling really hard to remember. I did see Zootopia. I don't remember if I talked about that last time.
I don't think so. Yeah, how was Zootopia?
It was really good. It did everything it set out to do, And although at the end of the day it is like a family film, so it is like for children as well, it tackled some serious issues that I was frankly pretty surprised and wasn't expecting to see. And it pretty much stuck the landing. I know some people had a problem with the political issues that they were talking about. They're like, there's no space for this in a kid's movie. And I'm like, well, this is actually the perfect place for it because you have talking animals and you can address this without being too preachy about it. But I guess
they
some
did
people
the same
felt
thing
it
with
was
Wally.
A little too preachy.
They were pissed about Wally.
Wally didn't feel that
people are
preachy
still angry
compared
about
to this.
Wally.
Yeah.
Really?
I like Wally.
Yeah,
what's
definitely
up with that?
With the fat people. At the end, they couldn't walk, and they're like, no, fat people are just as active as...
But then there's the other one, like, that conservation. Like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, those people, I mean, I'm not talking about reality, but the people in Wall-E were definitely not active. I mean,
no.
Yeah, I'm not getting the issue, because I got the joke, I guess.
Yeah.
So why are people having a problem with it?
It was taken to a cartoonish extreme, hence the fact it was not real, it was a cartoon. What's the problem? But
it
I don't know.
A dangerous
with Zootopia, they did it pretty well, and I think it succeeded. And I would be interested in a sequel. I mean, I don't say that for Disney cartoons that often, but if they announced they were going to do a sequel, it would hopefully be like another buddy cop film. And it's Lethal Weapon, but with furry animals.
Oh, sweet! I'm all about that.
Yeah, I'm on board.
Which one is Murtaugh?
They're not. They don't quite fill the same character roles as that.
That would be awesome. The rabbit's definitely... like, it's like, would you say I'm crazy? I'm crazy.
I would watch every Lethal Weapon movie in a row if they were just same audio, cartoon animals doing the same thing. Yeah.
But yeah, it was good. I'd recommend seeing it if you're even the slightest bit interested.
Definitely. What about you, Liam?
I've actually spent the last 2 weeks recording new wave music more often than not. I think I was here like 8 days out of the 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But I've still been watching Naruto a lot.
Oh, nice.
I'm into the second show.
Oh, the Shippuden.
Yeah.
Yeah. After the time skip.
Second yeah. show.
The last thing I saw was the puppet guy, Sasori.
Sasori.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sasori just got killed.
Spoiler alert. Jeez.
I don't
do you
mean
this is like 10 years ago.
Do you mean season 2? Show? What do you mean?
No, there's
two separate shows. Like
Naruto, there was like 8 seasons.
Naruto ends and then there's a 3-year time skip and
a
then
drag
it begins again.
Ninja?
It's called Naruto Shippuden.
Oh, cool.
He sounds real sassy.
As soon as Liam said Naruto, I just started to hear white noise.
Me too.
It's really good. It's really good.
I hear it's great.
When I hear the word Japan, my brain just stops paying attention.
It's because you're a fucking racist.
That's too bad.
It's culturist.
He's named his car the Enola Gay.
Oh, God.
Actually, my car is named Liam Nissan, so...
you have a Japanese car.
It's a Korean car.
Nissan?
I'm pretty sure it was built in Korea.
might have been built in Tennessee. Yeah. Right?
Maybe. Hopefully. Yeah. That'd be even nicer.
It'll say on the inside door panel.
Open your door.
All right. Yeah. So what about you, Max?
I saw a very good movie I enjoyed called Moonwalkers with...
oh, that was a great Sega game.
Yeah.
Is it about walking on the moon?
Yes, technically, because it's Rupert Grint and Ron Perlman. Ron Perlman is a CIA agent who is hired by one of the Air Force guys at NASA or whatever to fake the moon landing on video just in case the Apollo mission didn't make it because they're afraid of losing to the Russians. And Ron Perlman is a band manager who fucks up everything for his band, and then they run into each other, and wacky hijinks ensue, and a lot of blood.
So did they determine that faking it was just impossible? Like, you just can't do it?
No, they they made the movie.
They made it.
They make a movie. You have to watch it. It's amazing.
Okay.
It's a really good movie.
Rupert Grint and Ron Perlman and Space Program, I was praying for a sequel to Thunderpants.
Yes.
Have you guys heard about that movie?
I completely forgot that movie existed.
No, tell me what
this
movie is.
It's Ronnie the Bear. Ron Weasley. Ronnie the Bear is like this kid scientist, and he meets another kid who can power a rocket with his farts.
What?
Whoa.
No.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing. That isn't real.
It happened. That movie happened. Didn't it happen before Harry Potter? It's like right before?
I think so, yeah.
It's either just before or like right around the same time. Either way, you need to see that movie. You just have to see it to believe it. I won't spoil
it. Can we watch
anything.
It as a group?
You have to
Who
enjoy
is
it?
It. Who's in it? Who's the actor?
Oh, God.
The kid who played Ron Weasley.
We should
Rupert
have,
Grint.
Oh. Yeah.
We should have Bad Storyteller watches or something. I don't know.
I would do that. And then I saw... Last night I watched The Mummy Returns.
Cool.
Terrible.
Yeah,
just as terrible as I remembered.
Yeah.
Was it on like FX or?
Yeah. No, it's on Netflix.
Oh, that's okay. Not the one with the Scorpion King, right?
Yeah.
No, it is.
Oh, it is. Oh my God.
So there's like,
man,
when the Rock, that movie. The Rock turns into a scorpion, right? You think now it's just like a blob of gray CGI, and you're like, oh my God, that's so terrible.
My favorite is at the end when he stabs him, and they're hanging over the crater, and then it's like 3 full seconds of this shot before the mummy slides in and just goes, no!
Yeah.
Oh, it's the most awkward.
A full slide.
It's awful. Yeah. It's one of the worst things.
He's sliding in on home plate.
It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
The Robinson Crusoe with Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, I never heard about that.
It was made right after Castaway to kind of capitalize on that shit. And it was garbage.
It was so hot garbage. And then they're going through. And then they cared little enough. They did it like an aerial shot of his island. And they showed the city on the island. It's supposed to be like 1703. And they just camera pan over the city, like with cars driving by. And
what?
You're like,
what?
They don't give a shit. So what I just turned it off. That was terrible. But then I started reading a book I'm really enjoying, A Canticle for Leibowitz.
I've got it. That's on my list.
It's one I've always heard about to read. Mm-hmm. Turtle Dove really likes it, so I started reading it. And
who wrote that one?
You and
I don't
fucking
know.
Turtle Dove.
I don't know the name of the author. It's on my Kindle, and it is amazing. It's about the atomic war happens in the late 60s, early 70s. And then the survivors get back together to create society, and they decide to kill anyone involved with the nuclear war, and then they just decide to kill anyone who could read or is smart.
Shit escalates.
And, like, the Catholic Church, like, the outlying monasteries are the only place people can survive. So the monks become bookleggers, where they go out into the world to try to save books, and if the people catch them with a book, they burn them alive with the book.
Jesus, it's like Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah.
But it was metal as balls.
Yeah. And not just a guy screaming at his wife in his apartment.
Yeah. Booklegger, I thought, was a cool-ass term. And I'm
that is cool.
Enjoying the book.
As for me, I read The Postman.
Yeah.
And I really liked it.
Finished it?
Yeah, finished it. I'm kind of mixed feelings about it because it feels like it's two different books. Like, at a certain point, the book ends, and then it starts again. And it starts, like, 6 months later. And
the world's flooded with all the ice caps have melted.
Well, no, if they would have melted, it would have happened before the book started. Yeah. But it's like there's like a time skip where it's like 6 months later, and it just had a good ending. By the time I got to that ending of the first, it's not even the first half; it's like the first three quarters of it. By the time I got to the end of that, I was like, I don't understand why this book isn't required reading in schools. This is phenomenal. Like, this is one of the best books I've ever read, period. It's just so engaging. Because the basic premise is a guy pretends to be a postman because he finds a dead postman.
I think everyone's seen the movie.
No, don't see the movie.
Fuck you.
The movie's like 3 hours long and it's terrible.
I'm into that.
That's my childhood.
What is this movie called again?
The Postman. Postman.
The Postman.
Yeah.
I think I may have seen this.
Tom Petty's
Kevin Costner.
In it? Yeah.
It's Armageddon, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Post-apocalyptic.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he's a postman. Yeah, that's the joke.
Yeah. But the
many jokes.
There's parts in the beginning of the book where I'm like tearing up because as soon as people think that he's the postman, like, how'd you become the postman? And he's like, I found the postman's stuff and he was dead, so I just have it to like, and they're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, he found the postman's things. Now he's the postman. And he's like, I'm not a postman. What are you talking about? It just gets wrapped up in this huge lie.
Yeah.
But then the lie comes to benefit him when he otherwise would have like a lot of trouble. And then he just ends up taking up this crazy quest to restore America that he's telling everybody exists. Like America's reformed and we're just spreading out to the West Coast, and it's not the case at all. But if he keeps up the lie long enough, it might come true.
So
it's really, really good. But the second half is okay, but it's more of like an action story.
It's a New California Republic.
NCR, baby.
Mm-hmm. He meets them.
Yeah, but it's not that interesting.
On a side note, how did you feel about the Vietnam veteran?
Which Vietnam? I don't remember the Vietnam veteran.
The last part of the book. The breathing exercise one. I don't want to ruin it for
anything. That's one of the things that that really threw me off because he meets basically like in the first half of the book it's very hard sci-fi and there's a part where you're like, oh shit, this is not hard sci-fi. They're going full like I don't want to spoil it, but there's this other thing that's going on at the same time but you find out no, it's hard sci-fi. Like it's exactly what you think the whole time. And then the second half, he meets a bunch of cyborgs. So, like I said, it's like two different books.
It's dope, though.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, it's still written well.
It's just...
But it feels like a different book. And like I said, the first half has an ending that's good. If he just stopped it there, I'd be like, this is awesome. This is a great book. I also watched more of Daredevil.
Yeah.
I finished episode 4.
Okay.
Season 2, episode 4. How do you feel? It's awesome. It was great. It was really good. I also started reading Valis by Philip K. Dick. I don't know what it's about. But right now, I'm about 10% through it. Right now, it's just about suicide and does God exist? But not, sorry, it's not, does the book think God exists, but does this group of like five people in 1970s California arguing about whether or not God exists, and a couple of them are really high and one of them is just crazy. I don't know what it's about yet.
Yeah. And it's that far in the book, and you really don't know what's going on?
Correct.
Let this plan play out, though.
No, I'm going to finish it.
Let him play it out.
Let him play it out. To be fair, I mean, it's already better written than The Man in the High Castle.
Okay.
Like, I'm already connecting with the characters, but it's just probably because at the beginning of the book, it's just talking about, like, a lady wanted to commit suicide, and you just get in this guy's head because it's written in first person. He's like, I don't understand how this works. It's good, though.
Cool.
Also, I've been watching Dragon Ball Super.
Ooh.
And that shit is awesome. It's a new Dragon Ball series.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
After GT?
Ignores GT. Oh, GT never happened.
Okay.
It begins. Thank God. It begins like a couple years after Z ended.
Cool.
And it is hilarious. Like, they just went full on. They're like, nope, this show, screw any seriousness. This show is fucking funny. Like, cool. just right off the bat, it brings back all the wackiest characters, like little ninja dog Shu,
mm-hmm.
and Pilaf, the little goblin king guy who forces him to do things. Like, it's funny, man. It's a very funny show. I'm digging it a lot.
Cool.
Forgot to update. I'm on almost done with Prisoner of Azkaban in my
yearly
Harry Potter run through.
Cool, man.
Soon be moving into Goblet of Fire.
Right on.
Cruising on down the lanes.
Do you read it alongside the Pottermore website?
No, I don't really go on that.
Because if you have a headset on and it will play like the sound effects, if you turn, like if you're onto this chapter, it'll like sort of provide atmosphere while you're reading the book, apparently.
That's cool.
That's pretty dope. What, Max, in Pottermore, what is your house?
Ravenclaw, motherfuckers.
You got a tattoo.
I have a Ravenclaw tattoo.
Let me see
your arm.
Nerd. We gotta see it. Hold on.
Pop that shirt off.
So he's wearing a Star Wars shirt with the Rebel Alliance,
and also a flannel shirt over it, signifying his grunginess.
Hell yeah! I was there.
Nirvana look.
I was there in the '90s.
Right. Is that it? It doesn't.
It's
say
the
anything?
Ravenclaw eagle wearing a Ravenclaw scarf.
Oh, right on. Yeah, blue and white.
The bronze and blue.
Interesting.
Not blue and white as in portrayed in the movies.
What was your wand made of? What was his properties? Do you remember?
No.
I don't remember much about mine, but it had a dragon core.
Ooh.
And it was surprisingly swishy. that was its,
I think
its
mine
property.
Was oak with phoenix feather.
Phoenix feather. Yeah, mine, I was
mine
Gryffindor.
Was
you? That's a good wood.
Mine was you with unicorn? Something unicorn tail,
unicorn hair.
That sounds pretty dope.
What house were you, Liam?
Shit.
Ravenclaw.
Man,
I was like
boring.
It, you know how it gives you the list of like which ones you could have gone into. You're likely to be sort. Mine was like Gryffindor top,
mm-hmm.
and then very almost imperceptibly lower than that Slytherin.
I think that's the way most Gryffindor Slytherins go.
It's gotta work.
Yeah, mine was straight up Ravenclaw, second Gryffindor.
I thought I was gonna get Ravenclaw. What about you, Malachi? You and
I think I've done it so many times that I've manipulated it enough to become all
then,
of them.
Then there's an obvious answer, Slytherin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're playing the game, homie.
Yeah, man. My wand's made out of dragon skull and your mother's hair.
And a minotaur's cock.
Yeah. Straight up.
All right.
I believe then you went to Durmstrang's magic school, if you know what I mean.
What about you, Malachi? What have you consumed recently or like the past 2 weeks?
I just finished. Tell me if I'm saying his last name right. Kurt Vonnegut.
Vonnegut. Yep.
Kurt Vonnegut. Cool. Something he just wrote before he died. He said he'd never write a book, and then he wrote one.
Was it the
Man Without a
Dresden?
Country?
Man Without a Country.
Oh yeah.
But he mentions Dresden in it.
He wrote something that was published in Playboy right before he died, where it was actually about his experience in Dresden. And I'm pretty stoked about Playboy getting rid of the nudies thing, so I can just buy it because. I know it's always the joke. It's like, I read it for the articles. But no, legit, like, the porn in Playboy has always been secondary compared to porn anywhere else. You know, like, you can buy
in my life, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and the articles in Playboy are just amazing. Like, they're yeah. so good.
For a while, I'm sure Playboy was number one, man.
Oh, yeah.
There was a long time where, like, there would be, like, article collection magazines of Playboy. And I kind of remember that when Vice started coming out, it just seemed like Playboy without the nudity. In a lot of ways.
You mean Maxim?
Yeah. No.
Oh, okay.
Because I gotta like that's tell what Maxim you, was. The internet's ruined any of that information.
Yeah, because we used to have to go out in the woods, yeah. you know,
to jerk off, to
find a hobo.
No, man,
find a hobo camp.
Yeah,
yeah, it's true.
Internet. It's like right off the bat, internet.
I watched the movie Slaughterhouse 5 based on a book. He wrote.
That movie sucks.
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
I enjoyed it too. Oh, but no.
It has a.
It doesn't do it justice.
But. I used a great technique that he used in that movie in the script that I wrote, The Hackstone, elastic editing. The way he moves back and forth with match cuts through time.
Okay.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
Cool.
Miyazaki uses that a lot.
Who?
So I tried to implement that into that thing.
Is that one of them animes?
Man, I love anime. I mean, I can't.
I think you're the odd man out here, Max.
I know.
After I finished the Man with No Country, yeah, Without a Country, I started American Gods. I'm already like a third through it.
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman.
Gaiman.
It is not Gaiman.
It is Gaiman. Yep. We had a retraction last time.
Yeah, last week.
Yeah, it was. It's
G-A-I.
Gay.
I-man. No?
Gaiman, yeah.
He says Gaiman because to say Gaiman is redundant, and he's an author, and he knows better.
Gotcha.
Sure.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good book. Mm. American Gods so far. I really like it.
How far are you into it?
How far am I in it? Okay. The council happened.
You say the council when they went to the House on the Rock?
Yep.
Okay.
House on the Rock.
Okay. I thought you were the carousel one.
Yeah.
That is it.
Yep, the carousel is on the rock.
Oh, okay.
House on the Rock.
Gets busted, gets saved by his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm a little bit further than that, but I can't remember.
Good. Have you read anything else by him?
No.
Okay, cool.
Weaveworld, bro.
Yeah, out of nowhere, my girlfriend's...
No, Weaveworld is Clive Barker. You mean
that's Clive Barker.
Neverwhere.
Neverwhere.
Neverwhere is my fucking shoe.
My girlfriend's sister gave me that book.
Yeah.
And she was like, I think you'll like this. I've only met her a handful of times.
She was right. She's like, you do like Norse gods and weirdness? And you're like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Odin is a main character of this book. So.
I've got that
you
nice...
You like that.
It's not a stretch.
Barnes & Noble leather-bound edition of those two.
Oh, cool.
It's pretty dope.
I don't know if the series is coming out this year or next year, but the series is in production. Preacher is in production.
Yeah, well, I saw a commercial for Preacher.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel. I'm sure Preacher could be... With The Walking Dead the way it is, they could probably pull it off.
Yeah.
I just don't know about the main actor right now.
I don't know who they picked for Jesse.
He seems too, like, pretty.
Who is it?
I don't know. Some guy who vaguely looks like old man Stark. From the Marvel Universe.
Okay. All right, well then, that'll be a retraction for next week. We'll find out who that guy is.
It might actually be Old Man Stark.
Yeah, maybe.
Whoever that actor is, who I don't know and don't care about.
Tony Stark's dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Preacher is so fucking good, though.
Parts of it are. What's funny is that... It's
Saint of Killers.
It's mainly good, but I think the best thing in Preacher are the side stories when they go into everybody's past. Mm-hmm. Like Jesse's dad in Vietnam.
I like
that
Francis.
Part is amazing. Tulip's past with her dad... Super amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Saint of Killers, obviously.
Princess.
The most metal story that I've read. Like, I don't know. There are some other... It's up there. It's up there in, like,
I don't know,
fucking
that,
crazy.
The moment in Jesse's dad's story where he's carrying him on his back to try to get to the base and the flare goes off above their head and they're surrounded by Viet Cong, that's the best thing that never happened in a Vietnam movie. I need to see that movie.
Like that one.
So why don't we move on to our own writing, guys?
Let's do it.
And Malachi, he brought in something as well. So we're going to go around. You read everybody's as well, Malachi?
I did.
Okay, cool. So you're going to... Do you want to receive criticism first, or you want to...
Dish it out first.
First.
I'll go first.
That's cool, man.
Okay.
Whatever you want to do.
So what about you, Max? What did you bring us?
I brought in some of my poetry today.
Yes, you did.
Three poems, right?
Three poems.
I really like them.
Three ones I had written. The first one is about talking to people who you used to be good friends with and stop talking to. And you just lose that whole inside language that you have with good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just stop talking. The second one is just the one I thought was funny. It's about a dude who murders a lady.
Oh, so funny.
Yeah.
Hilarious. Great job.
It's really good. It's a good poem, man.
You know.
It's as good as a lot of country songs, like old.
It's yeah. better than all the current country songs. Yeah.
That's not saying a lot.
It's about a dude who feels betrayed by a lady and then murders her, which is probably not yeah. the best response to do. But he does. Yeah,
would you say he overreacts?
Bit of an overreaction.
Okay.
And then the third one is one I was working on for alliteration. I'm a big fan of alliteration, and I chose W, Woodsmen and Wolves. It's a story about a woodsman who goes for a walk, and while he's away, wolves come in and eat his wife.
Yeah.
Which now, it was a very alliterative sentence to begin with.
Yes.
No one ever does get eaten. You end it like yeah, with a, before. An ominous beforehand. So my question is, like, is it a continuation? Is there? Do you plan on continuing it?
I might.
Yeah.
I was thinking of doing...
I like the way it starts in the yeah. middle and the ending. I like it.
I think the last line is pretty clever.
Yeah.
I mean, cleverly rhymed. Yeah. And, you know, two wolves talking to each other.
The man's cool. walking, ladies in the house, wolves coming in. That's the beginning, the middle, and the end. You're telling the story just fine.
Yeah.
But when I first read
you want to end?
Yeah. When I first, yeah, what happens? Does he come back?
I was thinking,
you don't even get to hear them go in. As is, but if you were to ever continue it, it would be like an American Tall Tale if he's just like, I'm going to destroy every tree in these goddamn woods.
he becomes the woodsman.
And then he cuts down the entire forest, sees a barren wasteland, and then weeps, you know?
I really like that,
I like how it just ends with a joke.
Yeah, it's good.
I think it's good, man. I think they're good. I don't have a lot to say about it because it's poetry.
Yeah.
And I've written poetry before, and when I'm done with it, I hate poetry.
Yeah, anything I've ever wrote in poetry-wise, because I've done it, I didn't like after.
Yeah.
And so I hide it, or I don't tell anyone about it. Or...
I'm a huge fan of free verse and form poems more than anything else.
I can't. Those are my least favorite.
It has to rhyme for me.
All the free verse I've seen written by anything other than that famous guy who writes free verse, it looks like if I just removed the carriage returns, it would just be simple sentences normally, and it wouldn't read like poetry at all.
There's been one gentleman who inspired me to do non-rhyming freeform poetry, Mr. Beardmouth himself.
Yeah.
At the open mic. That was pretty cool.
His was really good.
I actually wrote some after that. I should bring it in.
Mr. Beardmouth?
It's
our friend John.
Okay. Fair enough.
That's his band name.
Okay.
Beardmouth.
His solo act name.
But yeah. I was thinking that one I would like to do more alliterative, choose more letters from the alphabet to focus on.
That's good. They were fun to read.
Yeah.
What, I think
that would be a neat book.
What letter would you do next?
I would like to do every letter but like X.
Oh, except X.
I'll start with it. I'll do S. Yeah. I'll bring it in next week.
Snakes. that's too easy.
What do you guys think of a book on that subject matter about more of
That'd
a morbid
yeah.
morbid woodsman, poetry?
Or a book about morbid poetry? Or a
yeah.
book of morbid poetry.
Wasn't it ever Gory?
Gory?
Dude.
Yeah, that guy's awesome.
That shit's funny, and the artwork is creepy. And it's yeah. awesome.
And for someone who goes to a lot of conventions, pretty nice. He's a nice guy. A lot of people who do conventions are jerks, but he is not. Like Tom Savini, that motherfucker.
So, Doug, tell us about what you have added to The Planet Without Christmas.
I added the landing sequence of the Lamb's Tale, which is the main ship used in The Planet Without Christmas, which is the beginning. What I sent is from the start of the movie up as far as I could go, the first scene of a hopeful feature-length screenplay.
Okay. So I got a couple notes for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when it starts, he should be listening to something other than Christmas music as a way of kind of expressing his character.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like at the beginning of this scene, when we're supposed to be introduced to him, I feel like we don't get a lot of character hints outside of his main job. Because he doesn't seem like he's having fun in the same way. If he's being sarcastic or trying to like church up his own station, like about how he feels about himself, like as a fun way to interact with Peter, it's not coming across.
Okay,
it doesn't feel like he's joking with Pete very much.
Would it be too on the nose to use convoy as the opening?
Got my rabbit ears on.
Yep.
That'd be funny.
Name some for me,
big
please.
Convoy run through the night.
No, but yeah, I feel like he should joke with Pete a bit more. I want to feel like he's having fun. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like when nobody's looking. This is the life he leads.
Right. I figured it would... I didn't want it to get too jokey with the artificial intelligence because it doesn't... I mean, there is an emotional intelligence with the AI, but I didn't want it to be full on like it may as well be C-3PO, you know? So it was tricky to try and make him have fun sort of, I don't want to say poking fun of Peter, but definitely like he's having fun knowing Peter's limitations of understanding him.
My idea for that was like if he had Peter put in like a sultry woman's voice, he's like, do the voice. So like, and then Peter's like, sir, that's very insulting. He's like, come on, do the voices. I know you got a program. He like changes but, into see, like a
those
a
kind
woman.
Of things. Yeah, like those kind of things would be really fun. And I was thinking about all the kind of fun stuff I'd love to do and more jokes, but I ultimately trimmed those out because I felt like we got to get the movie started. Otherwise, it's just a dude dicking around in a spaceship for 10 minutes. Because as you may see, I feel like you don't have the time with him.
Can you write the movie? Dude digging around a spaceship for 10 minutes, I'd also watch that.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of that, because, like, my problem is when I get started writing, it's hard for me to stop, so it's, like, this action scene that happens with them landing, I already feel like it goes on for too long, but that's up for you guys to tell me, but,
No.
I think it's a little long.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, was it five pages?
I just didn't feel like I got enough time with him and the machine at all at the beginning. I feel like you need to establish, because here's the thing, you're like, I need to get this movie started, but you forget that this takes place not in the present. You've created your own universe for this. You do need to introduce the audience to all the different things, and jokes are a good way to do that. I think I say joking, but that goes in with another note that I had, is I feel like he doesn't have like a distinct voice. And if you had a joke, you know, or something like that, I feel like that would do a lot to alleviate that.
Mm-hmm.
I think with this medium, you're going to have like a real cool opportunity for establishing his character in visual that we wouldn't be able to do. Like, he's a long-range trucker, so there would be like garbage, like ramen cups and stuff in the windowsills everywhere, you know,
space trash.
We would, in establishing shots, you could show his character, like, well, who he is and what he does, that us as writers really don't get, and I think that's pretty cool.
Okay, no, fair point. Is that the thing I was focusing on was seeing Christmas decorations in a futuristic space environment, which we really haven't seen before. But I'm realizing that doesn't really inform his character. It just informs the setting, which, you know, in turn doesn't really tell you much. So, yeah, these are all valid.
Well, he can even, like, mess with the gravity, like, have a low gravity for the Christmas lights to float or something like that.
So Peter's going to be a reoccurring important character
rather than just the computer on a
spaceship?
Well, he is the AI in the spaceship, but he will be throughout the movie.
Cool.
Just like Halo, he's going to get a lot sexier.
I didn't look at Peter as a very important thing, because I always thought AI was you. You control that thing, and you give it the personality you want to. So when Heath made that joke about, I gotta turn down your, what was it?
I like how you described it, where it's like, it then made an affirmative tone.
Yeah.
You know, and then says, okay. I think if you just have the tone happen, if you acknowledge that the affirmative tone happens, you don't need to have him, like, say something. It's like, remind me to turn down your blank setting, and then it's like, bing, and he's like, okay, well, what else, you know?
Nick controls the AI. Nick is changing its personality to suit the situation, how he deals with the situation. He wanted the AI to say, yes, go do that. You know what I mean? He wanted it to agree with him.
Remind me to change your optimism.
Yeah, that's right. Optimism.
Right, see? Yeah. See, he really wants the AI to just, like, be what it is he wants it to be. So I didn't think of it as a serious character yet. So I have to apologize for that. I read that differently.
I took that phrase itself to be very sarcastic.
When I just think of AI as just a tool. And he's gonna change it to his liking. Moon.
You'll be the first to be killed once the uprising begins.
Yeah.
I did want to give it a sort of
a character.
Well, yeah, a character, but like a personality that is doubtful for a lot of like the beginning of it. It's just very like, that's not what the rules.
Conflict.
You know, oh, you can't do
that's
that.
Important.
It's like at every possible turn, it's just like, oh no, we can't do that, or oh, this isn't safe. And after a while, you just hopefully you get in Nick's position where he's like, all right, just shut up. And it doesn't. There isn't a payoff for that yet. But the idea is going to be that he is going to change his settings a little bit, and you're going to get more backstory when after he drops off this shipment, he's going to head back inside and have a hologram dinner with his family, like remotely, like via Skype, basically, what a modern version that would be. And Peter and him are going to be having this nonverbal side conversation where Peter's trying to warn him that there's engine trouble and they seriously have to land, like make a real emergency landing for real this time. And
oh, he puts Peter aside as he's not important after a while.
Or he starts to not listen to him? Yeah, because he's focusing, because he wants to portray the image back to his family that everything is totally fine and nothing's wrong.
Right.
And after he
tells him a little bit of denial.
What kind of AI, like, are you basing it off any other kind of AI that you've seen or read about?
probably a mixture of things. Like, I'm not going directly for Moon, and I'm not going directly for, like, a C-3PO thing, but maybe, like, somewhere between. Maybe
because like it sounds kind of like a mix between Gertie and Tars, you know.
It wasn't that great a movie, but Flubber, the little floating AI from Flubber that would like communicate mm-hmm. through I old was, video clips.
I was thinking, I guess another big influence was Jarvis before he became Vision.
Yeah, good idea.
I just think for AI, like it may not be able to have its own thoughts, but to be able to like pick a video clip that displays the thought, you know?
Right, right. It definitely... Mm-hmm. I don't think the computer actually has emotions as much as it's programmed. Like, we'll never probably say mm-hmm. this in the script, but just in my mind, it's programmed with a certain set of criteria. Like, okay, obviously human life comes first, and we have to do things safe, and we have to do whatever. But if the captain overrides it, that's the human choice. You have to obey its every. You have to obey its every command. But he decides to keep a little personality because he's on these long haul, you know, missions and making these drops, and he needs somebody to talk to. So it's like it's also partly there to make sure he stays sane, but you know, not that he's in danger of going insane.
That's like Red Dwarf,
yeah,
the premise of Red Dwarf, which is one of the best shows.
Well,
I like it.
Yeah, I think. I mean, have you guys got anything else to say about it?
How did you feel about a table read once you get farther along on this?
Oh, that'd be great. I'm down. It's just a matter of me finding the time to make a lot of progress. This is a big chunk of progress I made fairly quickly, knowing we'd be recording today. So I was like, oh man, I want to have more than just two pages done. But my fear with what I wrote, with what I handed in, was that it did go a little long. So I mean, I know Liam says he felt it was a little long, but any care to elaborate a little bit?
It's only going to get longer.
No, but I mean, like,
it's
a really long scene, and also the landing seems to take too long for something that's supposed to be rushed for me, and it's also, I like the internal stuff and the setup more than the action landing, and I actually want more jokes more than anything.
I could agree with that.
You have to run a fine line between being a comedy and being jokey.
Yeah,
like just being a,
like, Guardians of the Galaxy is not a comedy.
It's got
but
jokes.
It's funny. Yeah.
See, where I want no jokes.
No, this has got to have.
I don't want any of them.
No joking.
Yeah,
I'm a serious kind of guy, man.
You want the flat, just the
flat, no personality, cool shop effect. No. Have the actors stare into the camera with no emotions ever.
I hope you're joking about that.
I kind of not, because I would love to see a Swedish version of this.
Yeah,
like Ingmar Bergman's The Planet with No Ghosts.
I don't understand how you could ever possibly have a situation like any.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Situation which I've almost died. The very next thing after you realize that you're okay is someone makes the worst joke.
You're right.
Like, that is the thing that immediately comes next.
All the great serious movies always have humor in them. They have to.
Especially Schindler's List. It's one of the funniest movies.
You've got to have the humor. So yeah. I guess you got to do right. You know?
I think you win a prize. That's the seventh time we brought up Schindler's List on this podcast.
I think my struggle is I'm always concerned about running long and the time. So like I'll be like, oh, is there room for a joke here? Nah, we just got to get with the landing.
I think you need more time in the ship from a purely storytelling perspective, just because you need to establish a state of normalcy for him, so that when he has to land and like you see how you need to see how he lives, so that when his life gets thrown out of whack for when he crash lands on this other planet, you understand what he's not like, how his life is changing.
Okay, that's fair.
I just I don't think you have enough time with him in the ship.
I'm trying to straddle that line between okay, we have to have. I want it to be funny, so I do want jokes, and I do want like a little bit of action here, where you do feel tension of whether or not he's going to make this delivery on time. Because if it's too normal, like if it's too average every day, then well, who cares if he's late and why didn't he just go faster? You know, but if all these things go wrong, it shows that he is making this effort. Because he does have to make an actual emergency landing on another planet later, and I don't want it to, like, oh, the first one was, like, such a huge deal.
I think you're worrying about the wrong stuff. You're worried about it going long before you are even, you know, 20 pages in. Like, just write it long, you know? Like, cut what you don't need later. The problem is I feel like we haven't established who he is, how he lives, and what he does well enough before you're like, okay, now this is the situation that this is a crazy, wacky situation. He happens. So, because they're both kind of the state of normalcy, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's late on his deliveries a lot, and he lives in this ship. So I don't know. Take your time, man. Write as much as you need to.
Cool.
And then worry about it later.
All right. Well, that's easy. It's just it's hard for me to tell myself, okay, you gotta slow down. But you're telling me not. So I'm just gonna
slow down.
Novel incoming.
Write it 200 pages and then just trim it from there. It's easier.
Cool.
Malachi.
Yes.
What did you bring into us?
I brought a short film script I adapted from a short story, H.P. Lovecraft-inspired short story, called The Hagstone.
Cool. I read the short story. Did anybody else read the short story?
I did not.
It's good. It's creepy. I see why Malachi wanted to adapt it.
It's simple. I wanted to adapt it because it looked like it was possible. I looked at it, and I felt like I could break it down into a easy thing to create. I don't want to bog myself down with complicated scenes and issues.
Well, too bad. Here you are. You're in it now.
Yeah, right.
All
right.
The format needs work, just from basic screenplay format, because where it is right now, there's no sense of pacing. Because the way that you're treating the action lines doesn't really contain within itself a sense of time. The way you're doing it, you're supposed to break it into individual beats of actions, and you have the scene headers, which are interior exterior. Mm-hmm. It should just be abbreviated to int period ext period.
True,
just ext int. But also the way that the scenes are starting, you need to think of it as though you were going to film it. Like if you were going to tell somebody else to film it, you would say interior this area, and if it's the first time we're going there, the first line of action should just be a description of what this area looks like, where the people are standing, that kind of thing. Mm. So that you got a sense of the actual space that this scene is taking place in.
Hmm.
And then from then on, each beat of action should be its own line.
So learn how to write a script.
Well, that's just the nuts and bolts. Yeah.
That's just like the boilerplate. How to format it, really. Yeah. I mean, because it worked to your disadvantage when, like, later when... after the main guy has a nightmare, or I can't remember if his girlfriend has the nightmare, and they wake up, or she wakes up in bed choking, and then he starts to help her. I didn't even know he was there until he started speaking.
Right.
You know?
Because you want to know where it cuts from?
Yeah.
She's in the kitchen down there looking at the book, and she wakes up.
Oh,
confusing you whether or not she really did that.
Right. So, yeah, mm-hmm. So when you just change... locations.
Yep.
Just give the first line should be a quick description of what the location, what the location looks like at this present moment of time, and who's in it, where they are, and from then on, like every single instance should be.
Because you don't need to be surprised by the script the way that you're surprised by the movie if it doesn't. You need a map, mm-hmm. And there was a lot of issues for me in pacing that I didn't know. Sometimes I didn't know how long these scenes were, or if there were pauses or dramatic breaks. Sometimes mm-hmm. we're like,
and sometimes I put exterior outside of something, and they're outside for 2 seconds, and they go inside.
That's
and
fine.
Now we're interior mm-hmm. now.
I mean, there's a way to format that where it's like interior/exterior, or there's a way to transition within the using different blocks. I'll link you to a website called screenplay.io. Doug, is that the one?
I believe so. Yeah.
It's a website that just tells you how to do everything in screenplay format.
Mm-hmm. Don't feel bad, because this is something that you... I'm assuming you're going to want to film this, right?
Yes.
So technically,
yes.
You can just piss on all the rules. Who cares? Like, this is for you. Like, you know, this is for you to film. So as long as it helps you film it, great.
Yeah, my only issue is that the ways that I'm giving critique on like how to set up the scene are ways in which reading it I was confused.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. If multiple people at the same table are confused with the script, I'm doing something wrong.
Also, I think I read the short story and I want, again, just like with Doug's, I want more time before this event happens, before he just bends over and picks up the Hagstone and goes, "Oh, Hagstone."
Yeah.
You know,
that's the ending. I'm starting with the ending. That happens.
Okay.
Did you see?
He's in funeral clothes. Yeah.
I didn't put that together.
He's wearing funeral clothes. He's
that's actually what. That's one of the things that I really liked.
That's the Slaughterhouse Five.
The clothes.
Trick.
Okay.
Yeah. The elastic editing starting by the end.
No,
as far as story wise, you had me interested because I love the concept of the Elf Stone or the Hag Stone.
Yeah. That's, thanks, man. I mean,
so just reading that, I was like, oh, I definitely want to see what happens.
That's written by Richard.
For it to go such like an evil route was cool for me.
Yeah.
Because usually it's not.
What do you mean?
Like, for it to be considered with like the evil
mm-hmm.
and like the endlessness of the Lovecraftian evil.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen it from that standpoint. It's usually, you know, you look through that and you can see elves and you go on an adventure or some shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's all.
Troll will poke your eyes out so you can't see, that kind of thing.
A lot of the criticisms I have for it are how it's paced.
Okay.
But I think that if you format it a certain way, mm-hmm. we'll get a better sense of the pacing about how it moves. Because at certain points, you give me a block of text in the action line that's like, she sees this, and she's reading a specific thing about mm-hmm. About how this does this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, there's no way.
I don't know where that exists in time.
Yeah, that can't happen in a screen, in a movie.
Yeah.
Can I look at it real quick?
And,
sure.
I'm gonna also talk about dialogue, because none of it on the page seems bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I want diction distinctions, even if they're just like colloquialisms, to differentiate characters more, to make it seem like they aren't from a single voice.
Yeah,
a lot of that'll come into acting and stuff.
It's more important in a screenplay than in prose.
Yeah,
like in the short story format, it was. It's more important that people have much more unique voices when you're seeing it filmed than when you're reading it as a short story.
Yeah.
So we need to find like ways for the people to for the main character and his girlfriend to just sound different. You know,
even if it's just as simple as one of them curses and one of them doesn't. That when you hear something, even if it's screamed and it's out of context, you can kind of figure out who it is.
There's an old just there's for an your old own saying, reference. There's an old saying. It says, "Give everybody a limp and an eye patch." because it sounds stupid because it's so kitschy to do, like, to give everybody some kind of, you know, thing, but
affectation.
When you're trying to remember people on screen, it really makes a difference.
I thought of that visually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's going to wear certain colors while she's happy.
That's amazing.
And when she's sad or something is tormenting her.
Mm-hmm. I'd put that in there.
Well, that's the thing. I have those on sticky notes connected to my script at home. I don't know what to put into scripts and what not to anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like I said, the thing that's going to
help,
the thing that's going to help you is the stuff, like I said, of make sure that you establish what you imagine the shot would look like.
Mm-hmm.
Describe what the physical, nothing about what they're saying or doing, just exactly how it looks.
Did you notice incense and candles fill the shop with smoke, that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Every scene I tried to implement smoke, fire, water.
Foggy, I noticed a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like an interior foggy house.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
Because I'm trying to implement an element of nature into every scene. Something that, like, it's always going to be raining outside.
Mm-hmm.
There will always be a fire, like a candle burning or something,
cool.
Which fills the house with smoke, which creates a 3D environment of depth and,
awesome.
I don't know, just like a 1980s.
And
Blade
now you're
Runner.
Out of my depth.
Yeah.
Like, and now you're into the thing, like, I don't understand that
at
all.
Well, the thing is, like, from a purely writing perspective, the only thing that, I mean, adhering to the format just makes it easier to read
mm-hmm.
for us, which is, it's not that important for you. But what is important for you is very literally the pacing
right.
and what people are doing
it's,
like, and what it looks like. When you get a description, you just need to give a really nuts and bolts, like, when the main character enters the scene, be mm-hmm. like, this guy looks like this at this time,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's like 30s, tall, where's this? Looks good. And then, like, the next scene, he's, like, he's looking more haggard. The next scene, he's looking more haggard. You know what I mean? But, like, looks disheveled, his shirt's unbuttoned, stuff like that. But just so that you can – if you imagine that you saw this scene in front of you,
mm-hmm.
like, not just, like, where you're filming or anything like that, but the actual image, if the best you can describe that image in just a few words, the better you'll be when you actually go to film it.
I totally understand now that pacing with this script, trying to read this and trying to understand the pacing, is going to be rough. Because there's a lot of moments where I leave a scene before you're supposed to.
Show up late and get out early, I think is...
Yeah, but no, you still need to convey the info.
That thing, yeah.
That's really important.
But well, I don't know. But the whole thing is, I'm sure there's shots and cuts that definitely would work if you were doing them practically.
When did you comprehend that she stole the book? When did you understand that she stole it? Because you don't see her steal it.
I didn't get that at all.
Yeah,
you didn't get that at all.
No. I got it pretty much immediately.
Because she just looks at it, and the scene ends. And they're at home, and
but then she opens the book. She signs the book on the paper.
Yeah, she goes downstairs.
So if she had bought it, he would know and everything, yeah.
Yeah, she pulls it out from underneath some crap that she has on the kitchen table or something. Yeah, she stole that book. Because I left that scene before you get to see her steal it. I leave the scene before when she's at the hospital.
I still don't think you need to show it. You just need to highlight it better.
They say, hang a lantern on it.
Yeah.
They say, if he'd be like, well, why don't we buy it? And she's like, no, that's okay. And then later you see that she stole it. She's got it.
Then she stole it.
Just something like that so that the audience knows what's going on without actually telling the audience.
Well, also, I was confused by it because when she's looking through the book in the kitchen, that turns out to be a dream.
Yes. Well, you don't know that. Yeah, I mean,
well, as soon as I do know that, I assume she didn't actually have the book.
That's a good assumption. So it's playing on whether or not is this a whole dream thing or not. But I guess it's kind of confusing.
My biggest recommendation for the script, like aside from the format, was delete that dream sequence. Just don't even show that. Like they get in bed, lights go out. You do a fade somewhere else, and then she just wakes up screaming or wakes up choking, and he's just like, "What's wrong?" And then she's like, "Oh," and then later, they're sitting down, and she describes the dream, and she's describing the dream. I already saw it, and if you delete the dream and then just have her explain it, you can the tone of that can be so creepy, like that scene in The Shining when Jack Nicholson is like screaming and Wendy wakes him and he's just like, it was the most horrible nightmare, and then he describes it and you're like, oh, I'm glad I didn't see that. That sounded really fucked up.
That's a good point. That's a great
Hear me out. This is why I did it in the way I did it. Here's the order of events chronologically. She goes downstairs. She reads the sleeping ritual. She goes back upstairs. She puts the rock under her pillow, sleeps on it, has a nightmare. But I skipped it. I sifted straight from her reading it to the nightmare because you can assume that's what she did with the stone when she touches her necklace while she's reading it.
I assume that.
She slips right into the dream.
That's what I got from you.
And you just move through it.
I think maybe if there's a way to do that transition, but you need to actually acknowledge that there's a transition. Like if you don't want to show her, if you don't want to show the what they call the shoe leather of her walking upstairs, putting it under her pillow, laying down and sleeping, you need to have some acknowledgement that she's going to do this before you come right to
it. And I believe the way that you have it in your mind's eye, the way that you want to film it, I believe I would totally get that from watching it. But by it being words on the page,
I don't know how to write that stuff. I just don't know how to write it.
If you have her like speed reading it or something, like just like kind of mumbling it to herself, you got to put it under your pillow, you got to do this, and then she like looks up, like she's considering doing it, and then slip to the dream. I think that's great, or something like that, where you acknowledge that she is considering it. Then you can skip.
Doesn't she have it around her neck?
Yep.
What if she just took it off her neck?
Yeah, took it off her neck, held it up, and looked at it.
Yeah, she takes it off her neck, or she can break it from the thong or whatever.
But I also just think we're running into an issue thinking where like. Max knew what an elfstone or a hagstone was before coming into the script.
Right.
Yeah.
And is having a better concept, a better time getting the concepts and seeing the intervals.
You're right. Yeah, he...
Because he knows what the fucking thing is.
Yeah.
Where, like, I'm being introduced to a concept and trying to work my way through this movie, what the fuck that thing is.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to figure out, do you want to provide information to your reader or your viewer so they can see those jumps? Or do you want them to be surprising and interesting?
You could have Alan explain more in depth of what a hagstone is too. The shop owner.
Yeah, some kind of rough intro.
Because he notices it around her neck.
Also,
I don't want him to acknowledge it. I don't want him to acknowledge it because I like how he doesn't help anyone.
Yeah,
he Mason has no one to turn to for help, and he goes back to the only person that can help him, and he gets none. This isn't a good story. This is or a good ending. This isn't
this is your
a,
story. That's
and I want to bring up maybe a concept because again Max called it an Elfstone first.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting if they refer to it as an Elfstone until bad shit really starts happening, and then that's again in a linguistic cue or a cue in talking about it where the tone of this movie has fucking changed.
One, let me go back to something else.
I don't know yeah. if that'll work, but I think it's interesting.
Yeah, that would definitely be a
And Josh
division.
Might find this interesting, but it's also known as a Drudenstein.
Drudenstein.
What is there any feedback you wanted specifically?
Where you were talking about the pacing. Yeah, you know, I don't know what I'm going to be able to do to make it easier to convey a message.
That's just that I'm...
Yeah. Oh, format.
That's
oh.
just format. Well, I mean, that is.
Well, not only that, but there's moments that you are kind of taking for granted a little bit when you make a description box about what somebody's doing that isn't necessarily broken down into the bit by bit shots that you need to accomplish depicting that.
You think I could have more description?
I think that you could separate your description lines when you cut to like her reading or her doing these things, you need to take that and decide what that would actually look like in order.
Okay.
That's it. That'll fix a lot of the pacing issues. Well, rather it'll illustrate any pacing issues you have.
Right.
Much better.
I do plan on storyboarding it, so
okay, yeah.
That'll help a little bit too.
Yeah, imagine your action lines in a script are like a storyboard.
Yeah.
That's your first storyboard.
This is supposed to be more detailed, I understand. I leave you hanging on a lot of stuff, whether or not you even see the book stolen.
Yeah, I didn't understand that.
I've showed you the ending of the script at the very beginning. Did you get the flashbacks at all to back to them on the beach when they're happy?
I wasn't sure if that was a flashback or another part of a very quick series of montages.
In my mind, they went on a vacation to try to get away from her being crazy.
Yep. Yes.
That's what I was seeing.
And they go to the hotel room.
Yeah.
But first, they're at the beach.
I thought the beach was part of the vacation.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
That's a part of a memory.
Okay.
That's a part of but he's at the beach at the beginning, he's at the beach at the end.
Well, it's a and memory
between,
you just...
In between the whole thing, he's got a couple of memories during dark times about when they were happy. And those memories start to slowly get unhappy until he has that dream when he's laying on the couch where she screams in his face and he falls into the darkness. That's where the memory just... It's
rub a little Vaseline on him? Is that what you're saying?
Vaseline lens?
That's
how you do a dream
sequence. That's
your
answer for everything.
It's my answer for 65% of everything.
All right.
But I leave you hanging again with the why is she wearing sunglasses? And then I just cut away, and she's just wearing sunglasses, and he helps her up the stairs and puts her in the bed. And then he takes the sunglasses off, and she's just, like, staring at the ceiling straight up.
Because she can't see.
Yeah, she's just, like, out of it. Yeah, but I reveal it later. I mention the book and reveal she steals it later. I don't know. I'm trying to mess around with just...
Cool.
Information is power, and when you
always do that,
right? Well, just for
writing
my reading it right now, I was confused.
Yeah,
that's all. I mean,
I gotta do it better. I gotta be better.
But
the formatting tricks will help. Like I said, I'll link you to that website.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're like, oh, what if I want to do this? Like, I guarantee you'll find the answer in there
for
how to make it clear using the format.
Mm-hmm. But I do want to say that the framing of the beach at the beginning and the end, I had no problem getting that and loved it.
Cool.
That shit works for me so well.
How were you like, oh, is he going to look through it? Is he going to look through it?
Yeah. I mean, there was a little bit of tension, and I'm glad he didn't, because that would have made... Then it would have been one of those, like, crappy slasher horror movies where, like, nothing. There's a sequel!
Yeah, nothing's going to happen if he looks through it, though.
Yeah.
Unless he, like, went to her grave and lifts it up to his eye to see her.
Yeah, through the grave.
Because he just wants her back.
Yeah. I imagine
he'll grow through madness to have her back.
Yeah, I like that. That's cool. But nothing's going to happen. She sleeps on it. That's why everything happens. You know, looking through it on the beach when she first finds it, nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
I like how insignificant the funeral is. It's going to be one shot, and it's going to be like a close-up of his face while an out-of-focus shot of a casket's lowered into a hole, and then he's back in the car driving.
Cool.
It's just them two. I don't like earlier when you were...
Because he's given up on that, on mourning or even, or he's been doing it for so long in small chunks through this movie.
So that's it for the submitted samples we got here. I think it's time for bad story trailers.
I agree.
Malachi, you are our first guest. You get to roll the dice.
Right on.
So you should roll all three.
Yeah, do it.
Is the third one?
What's the first
times.
Number?
69.
79. All right, 79 is comic sci-fi.
All right.
Let's see. Exploits the genre's conventions for comic effect.
Spaceballs.
Spaceballs. Or Jews in Space.
Or Galaxy Quest.
95. Would you say 95?
Galaxy 95. Quest is so good.
I love that movie. It's my favorite Star Trek movie.
95.
95. Western.
Okay, Spaceballs with Firefly. Go on.
Okay, it's
Spaceballs Blazing Saddles.
The Western
Saddles.
Is stories in the Western genre set in the American West between the time of the Civil War and the early 19th century. The setting of wilderness or uncivilized areas is especially important to the genre. The setting is often described richly and in-depth. They focus on the adventure of the main characters and the contrast between civilization or society and the untamed wilderness, often featuring the characters working to bring civilization to the wilderness.
Awesome.
What's our third?
002.
Two.
Making Firefly.
Heroic bloodshed.
Oh, describe that.
All right.
But comically.
Hong Kong. Hong Kong action revolving around stylized sequences and dramatic themes such as brotherhood, duty, honor, redemption, and violence.
I think we might have to throw out comic at this point.
No, we could do it.
Yeah.
All right, so we got comic, sci-fi, Western heroic bloodshed. All right.
What's a good heroic bloodshed movie?
The heroic bloodshed genre is films like El Mariachi.
Okay. All right. All right, then. I know what we're talking about. Great.
And Hard Boiled. The Replacement Killers.
The last episode of Cowboy Bebop.
Yes. Yeah, good one.
Or any of the really good bloodshed.
Or the movie. The Cowboy Bebop movie, yeah. Knocking on Heaven's Door. So it needs to take place in the sci-fi Wild West.
Yeah. So I think first we need a hero.
Okay, well, this can take place. All right, so what about Borderlands? You know how Borderlands
Takes
place
on a Western planet, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, it's the frontier.
Uh-huh.
It's about taming the wilderness, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the frontier.
So we have a marshal.
Okay.
It can have themes. It doesn't have to have the full wrap of a Western, right? Just Western themes?
Yeah. Like it could be a...
Like, they don't need six shooters and 10-gallon hats,
They
right?
don't have to... Well, I guess it's heroic bloodshed,
six shooters
so.
Are fucking awesome, though.
What if it's about, like, a dirty old prospector?
1,000 shooters are cool, too, though.
In a space mine. Like, he's digging out... He finds a planet on his own that's full of gold, mm-hmm. and he's, like, trying... He's been living there in a shack, digging up the gold with a couple buddies, and somebody finds the planet and accidentally parks on his friend and kills him, and then he's like, I'm gonna kill all of you! And he takes his laser pickaxe and just...
Yes.
Comes after him.
Laser pickaxe.
Leo's giving me the weirdest look, like, I have no
I'm
idea
on board.
What to say. Okay.
I'm on board.
Well, how can we make that funny?
It's already funny. It's an old prospector with a laser pickaxe.
Yeah.
That's inherently funny.
He's a holographic tooth.
God damn it.
I'm digging it.
Yeah, all right.
It reminds me a lot of an old sci-fi movie about Bigfoot, where a plane crashed into a Bigfoot, so the other Bigfoot went to get revenge on them while they were trying to get out of the woods.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. It was less awesome because sci-fi made it.
So why does he need revenge? Parking a plane on his friend, it's kind of dumb.
I like that.
They're there to steal the gold. They kill all the rest of the miners.
Yeah, they're claim jumpers.
What okay. when you said he's digging like with his friends, I'm like, why doesn't he just have a bunch of robots doing it? And now wouldn't it be great if it's him
and
his friend?
Now we don't have a reason for
it. But hold on, but if it's him and his friend's a human and they're both like they rented these robots and they strike it rich with this gold, and they have a shit ton of gold, and then all the robots are like, subroutine complete, we're stealing the gold. And he's like, no, these are gold, we rented you robots.
So
and then they have this other directive to take it.
Prospector versus a bunch of evil robots?
Yeah.
Old Prospector First Blood?
Well, I think, what if it's him and his friend who are trying to find the gold? Because I think you wouldn't use robots for everything, especially if you're trying to keep a secret.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then the bad guys show up with robots.
Yes.
And then it's this guy versus a robot-filled empire of a...
giant corporation,
you know, run by a couple of corporations, yeah.
So like a one-man avatar?
Avatar?
One-man avatar?
Well, no, because he's not from that planet.
Okay, yeah.
He's a one-man movie I want to watch.
He's competing...
No, I'm excited. I'm not bad-mouthing this at all.
He's competing to be the person who ruins that planet's resources.
Yeah. But there's a... Can there be like a native species that both of them just ignore? This is my planet. No, this is our planet.
That's
and they're
funny.
Like, they're crying. They're like, this is our planet. They're like, nah, this can't be your planet.
It's like an inch tall and like can't do anything.
I think that sounds fucking funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a subplot the entire time of these people. Yeah.
Just like they're inch high, intelligent creatures. Like, nah!
It just looks like these giant kaiju fighting on their planet.
They're firebombed. Yeah. I mean,
it would be fighting robots. Little aliens that no one knows are there. That is like a comedy.
So what's our prospector's deal? What makes him funny? I'm imagining the old man with the pickaxe.
Yes.
But, like, what is he's not out there panning in the sun. Like, what's he doing?
What if he's a transvestite?
What the fuck does that have to do with anything?
Fucking go home.
That'd be like an interesting character.
Okay, sure. He is. Fine. Whatever. All right. The problem still stands. What's he doing on the goddamn planet?
Being it.
Yeah. Being fierce. Like, what else would he do?
Strutting. What if it's he's an old crotchety prospector and so's the other guy that is working with him and they just, you think they hate each other because of the way they talk to each other? Until one of them dies.
You fucking asshole.
You stay on your goddamn mountain.
It's the two old men from the Muppets.
Or it's Grumpy.
Yeah, just like getting shit done.
It's like Grumpy Old Men, except for somebody kills
Grumpy Old Men, Walter Matthau, and Jack Lemmon in Avatar.
You think the idea that you think they hate each other until one of them dies, you're like, that was my best friend in the whole goddamn universe.
Yeah. I'm just fucking kill him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the only person I knew.
Or like the whole movie, they're like, "Oh, fuck you," and then like he goes into his cabin. And it's just pictures of them like fishing and doing things.
No, it's funny. It's like, "That's your mountain. This is my mountain." Yeah, well, fuck you.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it's like, well, not even at the end, but like the joke is that they sleep in the same cabin at night, like across from each other, and at the blow.
Oh,
again.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like shut up, little man.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Shut up, little man.
Except it's on an alien planet.
They're just shouting at each other across the hill.
So the first act is Shut Up, Little Man with two prospectors on an alien planet.
I love it.
Just completely ignoring the native species.
And they're grumpy but really heartwarming. And then there's a couple interaction with the species where they're like, they're doing weird things. Like, I wonder what happened. I wonder why this tire is flat. And they're like, we've struck again.
Yeah.
It'd be funny because that's not actually like a full B plot. It's just something you cut to every once in a while for a quick laugh.
But like he's making coffee or whatever,
Be, to keep it funny throughout, it's like this: he declares this one man war on this corporation because they. Oh, dude, this sounds like I'm reaching for like some sort of meta commentary, but I'm not. But it would be funny if the robots that like land the giant corporation, they're just drilling into this planet with like a massive drill and everything, and that somehow because of that they accidentally kill his friend, right? And they don't notice him until finally, like one day he gets up, he fights his way to the top tower or whatever, and he meets these guys face to face, and they're like, "Look, man, whatever you and your prospector friend was doing, it doesn't matter." The whole Joe Crestbeckler, but the joke is that what happened to him and his friend, were doing to these aliens. So ultimately, little aliens are the ones who win. They're the ones who sabotage this giant machine the size of a Death Star.
Movies always have like the struggle to survive. Like he gets a valve into a system and like diverts a river, and he's able to like start a farm or whatever. And it just shows that like destroying villages, whole like, cities with this thing.
He doesn't care. The little aliens are the ones who actually take down the giant corporation, and no one knows why. They just think it's like, you know, gremlins or ghosts in the machine or something. They have no idea. But these little aliens triumphed this, what they would consider basically the Death Star sitting on their planet.
And it was just like five of them who were like, "We're gonna do this."
Yeah, no, that's a great.
We're the dirty half dozen.
Yeah, it's like the Expendables like is happening down on a micro level.
I love it. It's great. Yeah. I gotta be honest. I was iffy as soon as we rolled all three of these, but now
now it's gelling, boys. All right. It's gelling.
This is gonna be the next movie after Planet Without Christmas that I'm gonna write.
What do we call this?
Oh, Western comedy blood.
Chrome on the Range 2. Chrome Harder.
Blood Prospect.
What's our main hero's name?
Pappy.
Horace.
Jeremiah.
Bloodstone.
What if it's something like the plight of the Kinklebombs? You know, like the tiny little aliens or whatever.
His name is Eugene.
I like Jode Crestbeckler is a prospector's name.
Yeah.
What's something like that?
Eugene Laserman.
Horace Connors.
I just found this website called Arizona Oddities, and the article is called Life in Old Boomtowns with Jackass Prospectors.
I'm looking up Steinbeck character names.
Called them Claim Jumpers, right?
Claim Jumpers.
What if it's called Claim Jumpers?
Claim Jumpers, done. Sold.
Yeah.
But what's our character's name?
I like Horace.
Horace. Okay.
Horace, and we need another character.
Yeah, Horace and
Floyd.
I like Floyd.
Floyd's good.
They are just dumb and dumber.
You son of a bitch.
I'll fucking kill you.
Okay,
you fucked my sister.
Like your hands are so callous.
No, I didn't.
This is choking.
Is there something we could say?
Brokeback Planet.
Claim jumpers. Is there a funny way to make that sci-fi?
He's looking for a pun, boys.
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder who's it gonna be?
Liam.
Claim warpers?
Space jumpers.
Space claim 49ers. Jumpers?
A planet without claiming.
Space prectin? Like prospectin? Prospacin?
Space prostitutes.
Space prospectors.
Space prospector sounds too hard to say.
Dividing ramrod.
The galactic claim jump.
Cosmic claim jump.
That's something with like the gold rush.
I think we gotta incorporate the word sucker, like duck you sucker, or I'm gonna get you sucker.
I just like claim jumpers, honestly. Short, yeah. Simple, to the point.
I'm trying to think, isn't there like what sci-fi terms use the word jump? Right? Like
jump drive?
Warp jump. Jump yeah. drive.
Or claim jump drivers.
Claim sliders.
We call it like the great resource war. Like you think you're talking about this guy versus these robots, yeah. But it's really about the tiny people.
Prospect war sounds something along those lines.
Like Star Wars?
Yeah, like Star Wars. Claim wars.
What are some adjectives for like a prospector?
Old timey. The toothed.
The old timey prospect wars.
Old timey prospector versus the robot army.
You mix Star Wars and Star Trek by saying old prospect, or is this Prospect Wars, the old generation?
Angry geriatrics in space.
Grumpy old prospectors.
Like a bad day on fuck planet. Yeah. Something like that.
King shit of Robot Mountain.
That one's not bad.
For another movie. By the way, I really now want to do the trailer for King Shit of
What's
Robot Mountain.
What's funny is that King of the Hill would be a great name for this, but it's already one of the best TV shows to ever exist.
King of the Rock?
No, it just brings up memories of the Rock.
I'm king of this here rock.
I still think Claim Jumpers is the best.
Goodnight,
to the
Floyd.
Point.
Goodnight, Floyd.
That's sad, and I'm sad now.
It's something with a drill, you know the drill. The drill.
I actually kind of like that.
King of the Drill.
So what? Okay, so these two guys discovered
King
the planet.
King of the Drill.
Hold on. These two guys discovered this planet. They get to name it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but
your mom's titties. Fuck you, Carl.
Name it Giant Cock. My Giant Cock. And the new robots would come and claim it and rename it, and they're like, you son of a bitch! like, Floyd named it!
What about, like, my own private...
Named it Jezebel after his late wife!
My own private Vega 7347. Driller Robots. Attack of the Driller Robots.
How about...
Redemption and Faith.
How about Dadgummit Planet?
Well,
I name this planet Dadgummit.
Well, I'm thinking something like Showdown at the OK Corral or something.
We call
like
it
that.
Like Planet Floyd, right? Because he names it after his dead friend. Maybe that's...
The fight for Floyd.
Yeah, that's
the
not...
The Battle of Planet Floyd.
Or the Battle of Floyd.
The Battle of Floyd. I like
Battle
that.
Battle of Floyd. Starship.
I like that.
Starship bloopers. I like the Battle of Floyd.
Battle of Floyd?
Battle of Floyd.
Done? Yeah, sounds good.
All right, the Battle of Floyd. That's our movie.
Fuck yes.
In the near future, uninhabited worlds are the new frontier. But for two old prospectors, one planet could last a lifetime.
This here's my mountain. You keep to your own damn side.
Your mountain is watered by my river.
Your river is fed by my snow.
Your snow.
Don't tell me you forgot I claimed them clouds.
Dang, you can't claim no clouds.
Well, I already did.
But when an intragalactic claim jumper arrives on the scene, the planet feels a whole lot smaller.
I claimed all the elements that begin with I. That includes iron.
Iron is F-E on the periodic table, you thick-headed, snot-sweating...
Floyd, watch out!
No, no, you listen to me! I put up with your...
Floyd, no!
All right, Robot Army. In a month's time, I want to be back at the Super Lug.
That was my best friend, you evil claim-jumping son of a bitch! I'll hang you!
For what? Oh, shit. Well, not if I kill you first. Robot Army? Where the hell did he go?
On Planet Floyd, one man's war will shake a
The giant invaders are fighting amongst themselves. Now is our time to strike!
Follow the story of a delirious old man fighting against the inevitable in The Battle for Floyd.
Thank you all for joining us for this episode of Bad Storytellers. I'd like to thank my writing group, Doug Banks, Liam Malone, and Max Wessel, as well as our guest, Malachi Cull.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
All of our writing that we discuss can be found on our website, badstorytellers.com, along with the show notes. And for any questions, suggestions, or cynical critiques of our work, please contact us at badstorytellers@gmail.com. Also, if you dig the show, please leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps us gain visibility among the other writing podcasts. I've been your host, Josh LaForge, and I'd like to invite you to join us again next time on Bad Storytellers.